Political Pulse is made possible by listeners and by Lee Auto Malls, offering new and used vehicles to help Mainers explore the beauty of their home state. Learn more at leeauto.com.
This is Maine's Political Pulse. I'm Erwin Gratz. Mal Leary is off, but Steve Mistler is back with us. He's Maine Public's chief political correspondent. It's hard to separate politics from the pandemic these days. Steve, there was another attempt this week to convene a special legislative session. What happened this time?
Well, Erwin, I don't know if you've seen the movie Groundhog Day.
Uh-huh.
It's about a guy who wakes up every day only to relive the day before. And that's essentially what happened this week when Democrats attempted to a second poll to call a special session. So the way this works, as we've discussed before, is that under the state constitution, the legislature can call itself in for a special session with the consent of a majority of each party caucus. And there are four party caucuses. But for the second time in 3 weeks, Republicans refused to consent. In fact, all but two of them refused to even participate in the poll by Democratic legislative leaders, which is the source of another dispute, which we won't get into. Now, they offered a lot of reasons for this, but the overriding one seems to be that they don't want to come back for a special session unless the bills are specific to the pandemic. Meanwhile, Democrats say, look, we have all this unfinished work from the session that adjourned early in March because of the pandemic. So let's get some of those bills over the finish line. In fact, there are 162 that have been reported out of committee in recent weeks. I could talk about the implications of not dealing with those bills in a second, but it's worth noting first how this whole dispute of a special session is fast becoming an electoral issue, and a far-reaching one at that. Now, remember that all members of the legislature are up for re-election this year. And during the spring, Republicans began clamoring for a special session. They were on the Capitol steps, posting social media videos, basically saying that Governor Janet Mills was killing the economy with her pandemic restrictions, and that it was time to come back and strip her of her emergency powers and deal with some other pandemic-related issues. Well, now they don't want to. And why is that? Well, we can only speculate, but it's worth noting that Republican calls for a special session came at the exact same time when the GOP nationwide, led by President Donald Trump, was trying to blame Democratic governors for not loosening pandemic restrictions and allowing businesses to restart their operations. That's why we had several reopen protests here at the Capitol, and that's why they were happening all across the country. It was a completely coordinated and designed to support the president, who was and continues to be desperate for an economic rebound to help his reelection chances. The problem for Trump and Republicans is that the pandemic is not over and the virus is not defeated. And states that hastily reopen their economies, particularly in the South, are experiencing huge spikes in cases. So, the governors who maintain those restrictions, like Governor Mills, are viewed very favorably with the public. There's been polls that have reflected this, including a poll that you and Mal discussed last week. So, that may not be why Republicans don't want to come back, but, it's important context anyway. And so is this, which is there just so happens to be a big U.S. Senate race in Maine. And the Democratic candidate is Maine House Speaker Sarah Gideon, who is trying to knock off Republican Senator Susan Collins. And it just so happens that Collins' campaign and national Republicans are using this special session issue against Gideon, basically saying she's done nothing during the pandemic while Collins is hard at work churning out relief bills ostensibly. So all of this has led Democrats to accuse legislative Republicans of basically sitting on the sidelines and criticizing Gideon and the governor for electoral purposes, but having no real interest in doing their jobs.
Steve, you mentioned that the implications of not coming back into the session. Are we talking about the hundreds of bills that are in purgatory because the legislature was unable to complete its work back in the spring?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So there are about 400 bills that were basically left unfinished in the spring when the legislature adjourned about a month early. Those bills will die if the current legislature doesn't come back this year. And there's some big ones. I mean, just on Thursday, the Judiciary Committee reported out three historic bills designed to repair the state's relationship with its Wabanaki tribes. Those bills may never come up for a vote, a floor vote. The same goes for some of the racial justice bills that have been being worked over the last several weeks that have been given new life because of the social unrest about racial inequality and policing. And there are dozens of others. I mean, in the past few weeks alone, legislative committees have approved 162 bills. 74% of them received support from Republicans, Democrats, and independents here in the legislature. And 48% of those bills received unanimous committee support. But all those are going to die on the vine if the legislature doesn't come back.
And of course, then we have the governor, Governor Mills, who could call a special session on her own, but she hasn't either. But she does, Steve, continue to take actions.
Governor Mills has given no indication that she's interested in a special session, at least at the moment. That could change depending on what Congress does with another COVID relief package, if it does anything at all. Those negotiations seem to be stalled at the moment. But Mills has asked most state agencies to find 10% cost reductions. And this is in response to what is an anticipated huge budget hole, something to the order of $1.4 billion over the next 3 years, including nearly a half billion in the budget year that ends in June of 2021. The state has a rainy day fund of $258 million, and Mills has implemented a spending freeze for a savings about $250 million. You know, these department-wide cuts that she's asked department heads to submit may not necessarily happen, but it's a first step in planning for a scenario where it might have to.
And of course, they will depend, I presume, in part on whether or not Congress does come up with extra money for the states.
That's a key sticking point in the negotiations in Congress, is this relief for municipalities, local governments statewide. And, you know, just earlier this week, there was a report from the Maine Municipal Association that projected, I think it was $146 million shortfall among Maine's nearly 500 municipalities. So that local aid is a big deal for municipalities who may be forced to make their own local program cuts or raise property taxes.
Well, we already see that. John Jennings, the city manager in Portland, has kind of yanked back his original budget and is now telling the city council he's going to have to lay off about 65 people if no other money comes forward.
I have a feeling that that type of scenario will be replicated all across the state, and especially in service centers like Portland, South Portland, other big places. They have bigger budgets, they have bigger responsibilities, and without help, they could be in big trouble.
One other question about this tussle over a possible special session. Is Governor Mills getting any pushback from legislative Democrats for failing to call the session?
If she is, it's very muted, Erwin. And I think, I mean, there's been some grumbling about it. There was some in these in the Judiciary Committee, frankly, when they were trying to get these bills for the Wabanaki tribes over the finish line. You know, the people who are vested in those particular bills, including that committee and the commission that spent a year coming up with a bunch of recommendations, over 20 of them, to help repair this relationship with the tribes, those folks have a vested interest. They put in a lot of time into getting those bills over the finish line. And so there was some grumbling there, although I think the tribes were a little bit muted in their criticism of the governor because they continue to negotiate with her. And so I don't know if she's offered them some reassurance that if they don't come up this year, they will come up next year in the legislative session. But there are certainly other bills where sponsors, legislative sponsors who happen to be Democrats, are not happy. They're just not taking that criticism public.
Let's take a look at something else, the U.S. Senate race. We actually have a new poll.
We do. And the findings are pretty similar to the poll you and Mal discussed on the Pulse last week. It shows Gideon with a very narrow lead over Senator Susan Collins. And I mean very narrow, like half a percentage point, depending on which way the margin of error swings. A couple of quick notes about that poll. First, it did not include the names of Max Lynn or Lisa Savage, two candidates who have qualified for the ballot and could impact that race, especially in a ranked choice election. Also, 6% of respondents were undecided, which seems pretty low, but not really if you believe that Collins's fortunes are chained to President Trump, who has the uncanny ability to harden opinions about his performance and conduct. So it would appear from this poll that people's opinions in the Senate race are pretty hardened as well. It found that 88% of voters have already made their choice in the Senate race, while just 11% say they could change their mind.
Interestingly, though, that poll also shows Joe Biden ahead of President Trump, 52% to 37%, which I guess is also kind of interesting because it shows there may indeed be separation between the Senate race and the presidential race.
I think part of that reason, too, is that, the second congressional district, where I believe it was close to tied, if memory serves, or Biden maybe like had a very narrow lead, but with the margin, probably not a lead at all. And so, I think you're right about that, Erwin. It'll be interesting to see. I think people, there are certainly some voters who will cast their votes in that U.S. Senate race, maybe against Collins, if they have strong views of the president and do not like him. They may hold her responsible for whatever it is that he has done that they feel like she has not done enough to address. Those people do exist. The question is how many and how that will affect the race.
All right. And finally, we have a link between politics and punctuation. You have to explain that.
Yeah. So, yes, I don't know how you feel about the semicolon, Erwin. But
I use it sometimes, yeah.
As do I. But it's often maligned in newspaper journalism. I mean, I can't tell you how many times when I was a newspaper reporter that I got completely stripped out with a nice nasty note from my editor about never using it again. But this week, Atlantic writer Ed Young may have started a revolution to change this, I would say, ill-advised way of thinking. He used 23 semicolons in a brilliant piece about how the coronavirus has defeated America, including 8 semicolons in an amazing 212-word sentence criticizing the president's response to the pandemic. Now, Trump supporters may not like Young's argument as it relates to the president, but I found his exploration of other failings in this country's response to be quite persuasive. So read the piece, especially if you like semicolons.
There you go. Steve, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Erwin.
And that's Maine's Political Pulse for this week. Our producer today, Willis Ryder Arnold. Steve Missler is our chief political correspondent. Mal Leary off this week. He will be rejoining us for future editions of The Pulse, which, by the way, we update each Friday afternoon and post to mainpublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. You can also hear most of The Pulse on Sunday's weekend edition, and you can hear excerpts of it on Monday's morning edition. Music is by Rob Holt. I'm Erwin Gratz. We'll talk with you again soon.